Welcome to the Suits and Sandals podcast. Today I'm hosting Benedicto Cananza. He is the Chief Strategy Officer at Finance and Business Advisory International. Previously, he worked as the Deputy Managing Director of Nedbank Malawi, where he was also Chief Financial Officer and Chief Operating Officer, COO. He's a speaker and writer with particular focus on leadership, business, risk, entrepreneurship, and finance. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you very much for having me.
In Malawi, corruption is synonymous with embezzlement of public funds. But unfortunately, this is actually usually attached to public officers. In order to ensure adequate understanding of the subject, are there any practical examples that can actually help our audience to understand what corruption is all about?
Thank you very much for that question and for this subject that we're looking at on corruption. Well, if you look at the definitions of corruption, whether by books or by dictionaries, and I'll provide a blend based on what I've seen and what I've experienced, it includes, but not limited to, bribes, abuse of office or privileged positions. In terms of the bribes, you're also looking at inducing favors. There's fraud in there, procurement rigging, and this is done usually for financial gain on the part of the perpetrators, whereas on the part of, let's say, government, it becomes a financial loss. So examples that we've seen so far, when somebody, for example, is maybe being investigated for a matter, they may attempt to bribe people like officers of the police. People want to get a certain service from a government department. They may induce the officers of those particular institutions with monetary rewards so that they can decide in their favor, particularly people that do licensing and grant all sorts of permits. Those are some of the people that are usually targeted. And then we also see that there's a lot of fraud where people actually come up with a fraud scheme to defraud a government department, a ministry, by using all sorts of means. I mean, we've been talking about casket, we've been talking about services that are paid for but not delivered, and things like that. So all those form corruption in one form or the other.
And I know that yourself, you've been actually quite engaged after the 6.2 billion COVID-19 report came out. You actually broke it down. You had a chance to present that on Zodiac TV. And when you go through such experiences and just the mammoth task of breaking down figures, what usually comes to mind?
Well, for me, there are a number of themes that we can pick out. That particular audit report did reveal quite a number of things. Some of it was failure to abide with procedures, some of those findings that we saw. But then there was also clear findings that were actually pointing to the fact that people were engaging in corruption or theft of public resources. Some of the findings, for example, we're talking about funeral that was bought, but this fuel never found its way into the cars that were designated. There was money withdrawn intended to be for fuel, but in the end, no trace of where that money is. And then there's also instances where money was just cashed and no report of where this money was used. There were also instances where some suppliers were said to have supplied goods to government, and those suppliers were not aware that their names or their business certificates were being used to procure services that were rendered to government. And then there was this whole issue of controlling officers authorizing transactions that were outside the mandate of that particular audit. Now, we can sit here and talk about that 6.2 billion. And I must put it on record that it was not the entire 6.2 billion that was lost, but a significant part of it. And that audit quoted an amount that when you add up, was in the region of between 500 million and 700 million out of the 6.2. The worry for me is that if we take that picture and extrapolate it at national level, where we do have a budget of 2.3 trillion, what pattern are we seeing? And if, for example, that amount equates around 30% of what is being stolen, then if we extrapolate to the bigger picture, perhaps the money that is being lost is quite actually huge. But we can only speculate because we haven't seen the other reports. But based on that report, we actually saw a pattern of abuse. We saw rigging. We saw people using all sorts of means to defraud government resources.
So if you look at just this one picture, I agree with you. that we may be looking at one aspect of irregularities within the public sector, but at national level, obviously the implications are massive. So although developing nations like Malawi suffer numerous problems that stifle economic growth opportunities, corruption has been touted as one of the major challenges facing our nation today. Do you believe we should truly be blaming even 30% of our stagnation to corruption?
I believe it is a correct view to blame it on corruption, at least from what we've seen. For example, there was a report that was published in our local papers that suggested that up to 30% of the resources in the health sector end up in private hands. And those reports are available in the media. We come to the other side of public resources. We did all know about the COVID funds that have been stolen. We also saw in the previous years the Cashgate, and reports suggest that Cashgate continued and continues to this very day. And if you look at it from a perspective that those resources should have been used for development or for any other government purposes, but did end up in people's pockets, that for me is shows that we are being deprived of resources that could have been used productively. Because in the end, this money either goes to private hands and sometimes even goes outside of the country. Because some of the deals that we've seen that are used to siphon public resources are actually deals that involve money being externalized. And as a country that is also crying forex, and yet money is being siphoned for things that were never delivered, that should worry everybody else. But if you look at generally why we're not developing, why the economy keeps on struggling, I've also got other issues that I can just summarize. In my view, we've got an issue generally around execution. When we agree a plan, when we commit to do something, we don't seem to follow through quite enough. And that is why you see a project that was supposed to have completed maybe 5 years ago keeps on showing that it's still work in progress. So execution, just agreeing that this is what we're going to do and get it done, becomes a problem. Yeah. Our economy remains a narrow economy. Its base is largely agriculture. And every time we do have rain issues, economy also gets affected. And we're still in this year where we're also reeling on the effects of COVID-19 growth that we used to register at least between 4 and 5%. We had wanted to be at 1.9. We ended up at only 0.9%, with many sectors actually sinking. And so that should be a worry. We keep on importing a lot of goods, and our appetite for imported services and goods is very high. Can we do something about that aspect? And then we also have quite a number of bottlenecks that just affect our ability to industrialize. If you look at our industrialization and manufacturing sector, we've been closing companies more than we have been opening. So apart from corruption, yes, but there's also other factors that I've just cited that are contributing to lack of growth in this nation.
That's quite revealing.
Yes.
Most people actually have a way to invent, and they create unique ways of actually perpetrating corruption. And it's both in government and in the private sector. What are the practical ways that can be utilized by national leaders, meaning that from the president himself, the vice president, the ministers, and the heads of departments, mostly in government? What are the practical ways that can be deployed to fight corruption?
Well, first of all, we must realize that when it comes to fraud and any form of corruption, whether it's extortion or any other form, because it depends on what you've included in your definition, there are people out there where if we're calling it corruption, to them it's their way of life. So what we need to be doing is that in the first place, we can only eliminate corruption or fraud, whatever you want to call it, if A, we first eliminate greed, because greed is one of the key drivers of corruption and the like, because some of the people that steal are people that have got resources. And you wanted to say, what else was this person looking for? And they've got cars, they've got houses and everything. But you see, greed makes people to go for more. Somebody has already got billions to their name, but they'll still go ahead and try and take more resources. Then what we've also seen is a dangerous growth of appetite for fine things in life, where people want to have, if I put in the Malawian context, houses in these low density areas. They want to drive nice cars. They want to show big in town. We've also seen issues of governance institutions that are not functioning in the way they should function according to the laws of the country. We're also seeing that if we have to really protect our resources, the people that sit in those offices to authorize these transactions, if you look at their level of earnings versus what they are tempted with, you find that somebody is a controlling officer and their monthly salary, for example, is 400,000 baht, for argument's sake. And somebody comes in, do this deal for me, I can offer you 20 million kwachas, for example. You may find that such people, even if they were strong, they could actually not be able to withstand. So if you ask me, what are the practical ways that people need to do to eliminate this? It's going to be a lot of work. For me, what I've seen as a weakness, and the 6.2 billion audit report shows that controls are not being enforced adequately. There's issues of capacity and knowledge. Some of the controlling officers maybe don't know. So if we take it from the public sector, there's need for a lot of upskilling. People need to be equipped. I don't know how many people that are expected to control finances have got an idea how finances work. If they do, then well and good. But it would actually also see that maybe even the knowledge of knowing how to account for things was also lacking. Now, fighting corruption should be understood that because the others is going to be a way of life, then those who are fighting against this must be so equipped and so ready. And so what I want to see especially is that our governance institutions must be strengthened. And we must also remember that corruption should not be left in the hands of SEB alone, or in the hands of FIA alone, or in the hands of any body that will be trying to recover stolen money at the end. We must always make sure that we prevent. So our prevention measures, our controls, we talked about risk management earlier. Risk management is not just a concept from the book. It should really be a process where we identify where are we exposed. If we've lost money before, what lessons did we learn from those frauds? And what controls have we implemented to counter that? So there's a lot of work for national leaders, CEOs, and everybody to put in systems that deal with fraud or corruption, because the corrupt, that's their way of life. And if that's their way of the life, it's like a war. You cannot be fighting an enemy that is a 10,000 strong army and with guns and machine guns, and you want to set foot soldiers with knives and pangas. It doesn't work. Those that are fighting must also be equipped to fight at that level.
You've mentioned and touched on very important points. You've touched on issues of personality, of character, of DNA, where you say for fraudsters or corrupt individuals, it's a part of their life. So do you think appealing to their emotions would actually take them out of that mold? Or it's like a brick and mortar, done and dusted? Like some people are just meant to be fraudsters.
You see, sometimes we think a criminal is somebody who wears a face mask with a dangerous look and the like. But what it has shown, whenever people are now arrested, these are very nice people. Some of them even church people, some of them church elders and people like that. And then you wonder what happened. Why do good people do bad things? But you see, people are under pressure. These things we're talking about, appetites and greed, they've got a way of manifesting in a way that if you just look at the person on the face and you just trust them because they look nice, they look a good person, that's not good enough. So what we should be doing is to realize that some people will be out there wanting to defraud. And therefore, if we have to fight this, we have to put in very strong measures to protect the resources that are out there. Otherwise, to just rely on people's character is not good enough anymore. We really need to protect the resources. They must be prevented from being stolen rather than to wait that they are stolen and you want to try and recover them.
Oh, this is so good, Ben. Some people have said probably we need to go back to the grassroots and bring back all the lessons in ethics, whether at primary school level, secondary school level, into the universities, to make sure that we are grooming professionals who already understand beyond their civic duty to know what ethical work environments look like. Do you think this can help? And can professional bodies be part of this trajectory?
What is very frustrating is that, let's not even start with primary school. Let's look at professional bodies. We've got professional bodies for accountants, professional bodies for engineers, and so on and so forth. So if you're seeing fraud, for example, in the construction sector, maybe a road is being constructed, you find that if there's going to be any corruption there, it will be done by people that are learned, that went to school, that understand these things. But you see, we've become so greedy that we worry about, if I reveal these things, where will my next bread come from? So there's just been a culture of silence and sweeping corruption under the carpet because everybody's afraid. Mm. And it's also gotten to the point where certain things have been institutionalized, where if there's a huge contract and money is being negotiated, it's expected that those that are benefiting from those arrangements should remember, and I'm putting that word in quotes, the ones who granted them those contracts and things like that. So if you look at a contractor sometimes, you chat with them and say, "Chief, if I don't participate in this scheme, where will I pay my people from?"
Yeah.
So people have conveniently looked at their own comfort and said, "I'm going to do this for as long as I can keep my company floating. I can continue to pay my people." And people have decided to look away. What we need in this country is a culture which does not tolerate any form of fraud, any form of corruption, because these fraudsters live amongst us. You find that you know somebody earns only so much. Their salary does not exceed a certain threshold. But the lifestyle they are leading is way beyond. Sometimes we say people do extra income, they do some businesses, but in some instances, it doesn't just make sense. Mm. You find that somebody, for whatever job they do, maybe they're just a clerk, but they've got property in your most low density areas, the kind of cars they're driving. Maybe at the office, they take a humble car, but on the weekend, they're driving large machines. And 8 out of 10, every time we've suspected that somebody is living larger than life, they've ended up being involved in corruption of some sort. So I go back to, yes, we need to train our young children and the like. But you see what has happened so far? In my view, for example, when cash get happened, it actually bred more cash get. Because people said, some money can be stolen. So they were also inspired to steal more. And what is also perpetrating this is where consequences are not applying enough. You hear that 1,000 people have stolen, maybe only 5 out of 1,000 have been arrested. And I can also tell you that there are people who steal, and you say, if I steal R1 billion and they arrest me for 2 years, so what?
Mm.
So some of the punishments are not even hard enough. They're not a deterrent. So people are prepared to steal and go to jail even, as long as they know that money, I've put it in property in other people's names. When I come out, I'll leave off that investment. So whereas elsewhere, fraud issues, the kind of punishments that you suffer are actually deterrent. So we've got a society that has slowly just accepted these things. So if we have to reverse it from primary school, now in primary school or secondary school, it starts with cheating in exams. How many people go to an exam and write on their brain? So if people have started, if you get a qualification through LICAS, as we call them, it just begins that we're breeding a generation of people that wherever they go, they always want to obtain things by shortcuts. And if we don't address it from primary, from secondary school, by the time we get to college, people are already ingrained in obtaining things through dubious means. So maybe to your point, we can go back and start training ethics and the like. But if the fire is already on the door, this is not time to go buy an extinguisher. This is time to say, if we can use the sand to extinguish the fire, let's do it. Because the house is on fire right now, let's do what we can. But maybe for future generations, let's indeed bring about these measures where we can teach people ethics and values and things like that.
Well tackled. And there could be other leaders, especially maybe CEOs of organizations, who would say, my organization looks quite robust. We're quite versatile. We are hitting the right bottom line. It doesn't look like we have these fraud or corruption problems within our walls. And yet, if we look at the 2020 report to the Nations by the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, they say that pretty much every organization would be losing, or they may be losing, 5% of their revenues every year. And globally, companies on aggregate are losing trillions, which means if you come to a singular corporate in Malawi, they could be losing in the veins of 50 to hundreds of millions every year without even knowing it, right? So if you're sitting with such a leader who says, I don't think this is happening to me, what would be some of the things that you'd recommend to them to look at? And how can they make sure that they're not just naive, but they are truly fighting and addressing the issues within their own walls?
Actually, as you're asking the question, the word naive came into my mind, and I'm glad that you've actually picked it up. It would be very naive for anybody to think that in their organization, fraud is not happening. Because yes, we spoke from a public sector point of view earlier on, but even in the private sector, fraud is as rife as anywhere else. The reason is, as I said earlier on, is that there are people with just a criminal mind everywhere. And if you've got employees at your whatever level that you've got them, those employees are actually being lured by fraudsters, masterminds that are trying to defraud your organization. So no organization is completely foul-proof. Because if you look at the forms and nature that corruption comes or fraud comes in, even on the cyber side, I mean, we've seen cyber attacks, we've seen ransomwares, we've seen all kinds of things that happen. So it would be so naive of any leader to think that the organization is immune to these kinds of things. And if you don't put enough controls in your organization, actually fraud can be, you can actually be sitting on undiscovered frauds. And some of it is very subtle. Things like price rigging, where people just inflate a little bit of pricings. Those things can be so subtle that if you don't put mechanisms, you don't rotate people around, you may never discover that something is going wrong. So my advice is that people need to do a proper risk assessment of their entities and make sure that you put in controls that find, because fraud is both masterminded by internal and external sources. And somebody just has to read reports like those done by the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners or any report that auditors would have done where a fraud was involved. Your eyes will be opened at what people can do. So no leader should sit there and believe that no fraud could be happening. There's a lot of collusion that happens. There's a lot of external forces that actually come to your staff and try to lure them. And organizations must be promoting ethical culture. And further than that, they should be promoting very robust controls to fight against these kind of things.
So true, so true. Yes. I think in my professional life, I see this happening all the time. Where management and boards of directors who are just as naive later on get surprised when very trusted employees come out to be the culprits whom they've been keeping for over 10 years, for example. It's just quite impeccable.
I'm a banker, and I can assure you that some of the people that have actually been caught to have committed fraud were the last people you thought very nice, some of them church people, some of them very kind. But when you now begin to peel the story, you discover that this woman maybe had 4 children to pay school fees for. Then the financial pressure was just too much on them. They succumbed to temptations and they became a fraudster. But they continue to portray a very nice personality. You'd never think that they would be involved in such. So as we're just agreeing here that please don't overtrust. Fraud is real. And those who think where the least could be involved are the ones actually that get involved in fraud.
Very true. Now, Benedicto, I know that your time is quite expensive and quite precious. I don't want to take much of your time, but I'm thinking of one last thing. So considering all the grave consequences that corruption has on the lives, particularly of Malawians and the citizenry at large, anyone who'd be listening from different countries, what would be your last piece of advice to every leader, whether in public or private sector today?
Thank you very much for that concluding question. And I would want to reiterate some of the things that I've already said earlier. And the first thing that I want to stress is that corruption is so sophisticated. And these people have got the resources and means to oil every machinery to achieve their means. And therefore, trusting people is not enough. From a government point of view, for example, government needs to move in very quickly to implement best practices that are being adopted by corporates elsewhere. And this is to do with enterprise-wide risk management principles, because it has been proven that you actually need multiple layers of defense. The first line of defense is maybe where the action is happening in the MDS. Then you've got risk management needs to come in. Audit comes maybe third or fourth in the line, because they always audit what has already happened. If we leave it to National Audit Office and ACB to fight corruption, it's not enough, because they come in when the event has already happened. And chances have also shown that for every maybe 1 million that is stolen, for you to even recover 10% of that is a very high chance of success. So true. Let's not wait for resources to be stolen. Then we try to recover. Meanwhile, even if you prosecute the people, the money will not be there. So recovering stolen money, that's a difficult thing. So from a government point of view, I'm also looking at the capacity of governance institutions. They need to be enforced. The capability of especially controlling officers need to be looking. Do people know what it means to account for government resources? Please, let's put it measures in there. And then finally, I'm also saying that leaders must lead by example, not only to resist, reject, and report corruption, but they must also be seen to be fighting corruption. What we've just seen with the judges of the Hon Court, for example, where when they were approached to try and divert justice, they reported the matter. And what we now see is a high-profile case that is now demonstrating that there are some people with integrity. Mm. My worry is how many people have been approached on such similar basis and have kept quiet. And those are the people that are actually perpetrating and contributing to the growth of corruption. But going forward, let's see leaders that are taking action and very decisive action, because some allegations have been too obvious. Money has been stolen as much as in billions, and there seem to be no action. I mean, I'll put it on record here that, I mean, the other day, we were trying to say people should pay back 2,000 kwacha. And 2,000 kwacha, if it's even $3, that's even a joke. And yet, there's billions that have been reported to have been stolen, and no action is happening on those things. And everybody saying we are a joke. We can be, it actually costs us a lot of money to just make it the resolution to say, pay back 2,000 kwacha. When there's actually serious money that has been stolen and no action is happening on those areas. So for both private and government sectors, let's just be more serious about fighting these fights and begin to take serious measures that shows that we're trying to address this problem. It is a big problem.
Oh, well said, Benedicto, well said. And we always need to remember that whatever we do inside Malawi is actually seen outside. So when we are crying out for foreign direct investment, there are lots of investors who are looking at what we are doing within Malawi. And it all depends on what we're doing to see whether we can truly pull them to Malawi or if we truly intend to keep them outside our borders. So thank you so much, Benedicto. And as I said earlier on, Benedicto Kananza is a Chief Strategy Officer of Finance and Business Advisory International, which is a management solutions firm which provides consultancy to organizations of all sizes, focusing on business advisory, finance management, research and economic analysis, strategic planning and facilitation, training, enterprise development, and risk management. And you can reach him at benedicto.kananza@gmail.com, or you can also call him at +265 999 950 243. So, Ben, thank you once again. I appreciate that you came and you poured your heart to the nation.
You're most welcome, and I thank you for having me on this show.
Thank you for listening to the episode, and thank you for being a great audience on Suits and Sandals. To ensure we reach a wider audience, please like the podcast and share with your network. Until next time, it's goodbye.